Audio Discourse of The Plan for Restoration of Constitutional Government by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 3, Part 1, Small Units, Small Acts of Aggravation. Overview. This will be comprised of directed activities intended to establish the existence of an air of dissatisfaction among some of the citizens of the country. These actions might include targeted individuals and/or businesses that have proven their disdain for the Constitution, violated the Constitution by their actions or activities, are supportive of those who violate the Constitution, or have failed in their obligation to the people under contracts, such as insurance companies who have failed to make good under their policies. We must understand that the authority that the sitting de facto rebel government has emanated from the Constitution, and that this government was instituted under the limits described by the Constitution. Let it be understood that the term rebel within this article is applied to the de facto government that has rebelled against the Constitution that created it. The Constitution, having been created by the people, is only capable of passing to the government authority that they themselves possess. I've written an article, Let's Talk About the Constitution, that addresses this. Understanding then that if the rebel government has assumed that it has powers derived from the Constitution, though not enumerated therein, it has usurped authority, and that it assumes that the people themselves had, given that the rebel government has assumed that they have the right to kidnap, torture, and assassinate, they have by their actions acknowledged that the people too have that authority, at least until constitutional government is restored. If it is used as the means of usurpation, then surely it is fairly used by those who intend to restore the constitutional government. Given the understanding that we must fight our foe from as high a moral ground as possible, it is always our right and within our lawful authority to engage that foe in the same manner as they engage us. This, however, only speaks to the state of nature that many have found themselves cast into. Committees of safety, militia, and judicial bodies are bound by a higher standard in their official capacity than those who speak for themselves or as members of cells or teams. Consequently, the committees of safety, militia, and judicial bodies created under their authority shall not prosecute or impede those who have found themselves compelled to take action against the rebel government. In all cases, care should be taken to assure that the target can be exploited for the benefit of the effort to restore constitutional government, and should, as much as possible, be conducted so as to have minimum detrimental impact on the civilian population. If the purpose of the activities being conducted is designed to restore rights and the Constitution, a total regard for those rights, except for those targeted, must be adhered to. These directed activities shall be evaluated for the desired effect and can include law enforcement officers who have abused citizens without provocation, insurance companies who have not fulfilled their obligations for losses sustained, people in positions of public trust who have blatantly violated their oath of office, people in positions of public trust who have blatantly lied to the American public, people who have proven themselves inimical to the Constitution. A reference here to a listing called Bad Guys that lists contributed names to this type of person. Federal Reserve banks, that is the nine banks, not the subordinate banks, but the nine principal banks of the Federal Reserve. Special interest groups inimical to the Constitution, such as ACORN and SEIU and other MECA and other organizations whose efforts are to subvert the Constitution and deny the rights of the citizens of this country. Historical perspective. In many of the colonies, acts which were illegal under any form of law were conducted by various groups and individuals concerned over the imposition of stricter laws and taxes being imposed on the colonists. These acts of Parliament were deemed outside of the authority of Parliament because the British Constitution secured certain rights, and the existing charters which had created government in the colonies were being ignored. Numerous incidents occurred which we are all familiar with that would fall within the area of illegal activity. In most of them, the committees of safety or equivalent and the militia were not directly involved in the activities. History leads us to understand, however, that there was at least tacit approval of the activity if they were not ordered and directed by the committees and militia. Most of these acts were performed by groups identified as Sons of Liberty. These groups were most common in Boston and New York, though they existed in other parts of the colonies in increasing numbers as the actions of the British government continued to grow more oppressive. Holding to that which is most commonly known, we can look to incidents such as the harassment of soldiers in Boston, one such incident resulting in the Boston Massacre. We can look to the various events where a tax collector or other official was tarred and feathered, often resulting in death. We know that many officials were kidnapped, bound hand and foot, and paraded through town on a cart or on a rail, wearing signs proclaiming their unlawful activities. We have small groups of colonists tearing down homes, warehouses, and customs offices. And in perhaps the best-known instance of illegal activity, we have a band of Indians marching through the streets of Boston to the wharf, where they boarded ships and dumped the tea into the harbor, resulting in the destruction of the equivalent value of millions of dollars in damage. These Sons of Liberty, as well as other small groups, acted outside of the law. For the most part, they were never identified in their time by the government, nor were they prosecuted. There were never any witnesses to any of their activities that would identify the individuals, and if they had been identified, the likelihood of a jury convicting them was non-existent. All of these instances were conducted outside of any lawful authority, and if any trial was held, history does not reflect such. Private citizens who felt compelled to demonstrate their feelings against the unlawful activities of the government by unlawful actions of their own conducted them. They were quite simply willing to face the consequences of their actions in order to make clear to the government that the usurpation of authority would not be tolerated. Most importantly, understand that the people who did not participate in these activities, even though they knew that they were not legal, were willing to hide people, knowledge, and anything that might be incriminating from the government. Role of the committees. The committees of safety will not be part of this activity. It would be inappropriate for the committee to encourage activity that might be considered illegal. This would, of course, only apply to committees of safety members in their official capacity. Committees, however, would provide protection for those who might be accused and threatened with arrest without a warrant issued by a grand jury in accordance with Article 5 of the Bill of Rights. Committees of safety should enlist individuals with particular expertise to serve in the appropriate committees within their community. These will include, though not limited to, militia, correspondence, liaison, and intelligence. Militia Committee. The militia committee should be comprised of people with military experience. Their duties would include making recommendations to the committee for commissions, determining enlistment and training procedures, consultation with militia officers regarding tactics, and assuring logistical support as necessary for the militia. Correspondence Committee. The Correspondence Committee should be comprised of people with experience in various means of communication, have a desire to exclude controversial information from polluting the communication system, be able to work with other people in other correspondence committees as well as those in the existing press, and understand that that conflict with others effectively inhibits the flow of positive communications. Specialists in radio, video, and electronic communication should also be enlisted to provide support as necessary. Whenever a target is assaulted, the background of the individual or business should provide some cause inimical to the constitutional government that can be emphasized to provide even a remote justification. Such activity should not be attributed to random acts if possible. Recognition of loss and sympathy cannot hurt, so long as the disreputable aspects of the character of the target are also brought forward. There's an article pressed in the Patriot community that demonstrates how this applied at one point in our history. Correspondence Committee operations should endeavor constantly to establish an ever-enlarging network of correspondents, including other committee-related personnel and establishment press members who have demonstrated a willingness to look at other than the government side of the story. Liaison Committee. The Liaison Committee should be comprised of people with good personal communication skills. Once assigned, they should start enlisting resources among people in the community who work for or have close ties with the government and industry. Their efforts should include learning what they can of the rebel government's plans, develop resources in existing government and industry. Enlistment of government employees or those in contact with government who can provide information regarding the activities, plans, intentions of the rebel government should be pursued from the very beginning. Intelligence is invaluable. Whenever information is developed that would assist the Intelligence Committee, it should be forwarded to that committee as soon as possible. Anticipate future needs to communicate with both government and industry leaders to negotiate transfer of authority as necessary. This will be explained further later on. Intelligence Committee. The Intelligence Committee should be comprised of researchers and those versed in intelligence matters. An understanding of some of the methods that will be used by the rebels to infiltrate, redirect, misdirect, or otherwise create problems for the constitutional side. This is explained in an article called Vortex. Their duties will include, initially only within their county, investigation of committee and militia members. If questions arise as to the loyalties, experience, or any other background deemed important for the security of the constitutional forces. Gathering and analyzing and disseminating information regarding rebel activities and personnel. Identification of government services and other resources that will require attention and involvement for continuity of the services. Identification of industry that will require attention for the continuation of production and distribution of necessary goods. The militia duties. The militia, operating in the capacity of militia, will not be involved at this part of the plan. Members of the militia not acting in the official capacity of militia, such as members of security teams and individual cells, these are described in an article on security teams and another article, Leaderless Resistance by Lewis Beam, would be the primary elements in this activity. They will be operating outside of the law and without authority, though they should be protected as much as the members of the French Resistance were during World War II. Every effort should be made, so long as additional risk to the operation is not created, to avoid loss of life to those not specifically targeted.